Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Again, a difficult subject to start with, and I thought a month ago when we were covering this story at Lent, we were contacted by a legion of women and indeed men about the situation in maternity hospitals, especially for women who are having difficult and challenging times, and the a blanket ban, it seemed, on partners. And then all the hospitals told us we will use our discretion from now on. Now, Gemma, good afternoon, Gemma.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Well, how are you? You got bad news, unfortunately, last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, Joe. I suppose today I should have been going into the rotunda for my 12-week scan.
Yeah.
And last Thursday I went for a private Harmony test. And with that, you need to get a scan with it. So just to put this into context, I had had two scans previous to this and everything was going really well. There was a heartbeat, baby was looking good. So I was going into this scan feeling good. And I had asked on all three occasions, could my husband come with me? You know, it was my understanding that with the private scans that you could have someone attend with you, but he wasn't allowed. And then, so on Thursday, I was there on my own. I had driven in on my own. I said I was feeling good about the scan, so I drove in on my own thinking all would be fine. Mm. And I just got the devastating news that there was no heartbeat.
Yeah.
So I was crushed, very lonely straight away and just absolutely heartbroken.
Yeah. And this would have been your first child?
This was our first child, yeah. So I rang my husband, then he was in work. And I didn't see him for another 3 hours. I had to drive home on my own and then eventually see him about 3 hours later.
And what did the hospital say about returning?
So this was a private scan centre. So they said that they would normally refer me to the early pregnancy assessment unit in Holles Street, because they were kind of associated with Holles Street. But because I was attending the rotunda, they told me to ring the rotunda the next day myself. This was quite late in the afternoon, so they knew that assessment unit would be closed. So on Friday, I rang up the rotunda, and the rotunda told me that the next appointment they would have to even assess me would be tomorrow, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose they were expecting me to go around for the weekend with this traumatic news before even assessing me. My husband at this stage now, he was very angry. But we found a solution to that. I rang Holles Street, and Holles Street said because there was no fetal heartbeat that they would take me in that day for an assessment.
Okay.
So that was positive. So that was maybe 9:30 on Friday morning, and then by 12 I was in the hospital. And again, on the way in, I rang, so they know there's no heartbeat, and then I rang the hospital to see, could my husband come in, and again was told no. So went in, was waiting for an hour on my own. And had that final scan, and I suppose, Joe, just as you can imagine, like, you know what to expect at that stage. There's going to be no movement out of the baby, and there's going to be no flicker of a heartbeat, and you're still there all alone in that room with the midwife. So my husband never once saw a scan of the baby, like, never saw the baby at all. After I was very, very upset in that room, and they finally, reluctantly allowed my husband into the hospital for the meeting that I would have with the registrar about next steps.
And the next step is taking place tomorrow.
Tomorrow, right? So the next steps are, I didn't miscarry the baby myself, so they need to perform a procedure to remove the baby from me. So a 3-day wait between, I suppose, Friday and tomorrow as well, which is kind of unavoidable given that it was Friday. But I suppose, again, then tomorrow, I'm going to be on my own.
And did you ask? I presume you did.
My husband was there with me.
Yeah.
So, of course, it was the first thing he asked. And they said you would be under the care of the hospital. That I would have support from the hospital. But it's not the same. It's not the same as having your husband there tomorrow.
And did they say no exceptions, or there are exceptions, but this doesn't fall into one of the categories?
They didn't say anything about exceptions. They just said normally you would be, but not under the current circumstances of the hospital. That he would be allowed to drop me off at 7 a.m. and would be rang to collect me at 3 p.m. approximately. But nothing about.
And what I mean, drop you off. It means drop you off on the street.
At the door. Yeah.
Yeah. Not in the room, or you can't walk with you up.
No.
And
the other thing is, Joe, like, I mean, that was Friday. I understand, right, we're in a global pandemic. I understand that. I understand that visitation to any type of hospital has to be managed. Yeah. I understand that if you spoke to Hollis Reid or the Rotunda, of course, they're going to say that they can't afford for the virus to get into the hospital to protect all other mothers and their staff, children, not just and the staff.
Yeah.
But could they not give my husband a test on Friday? So that there would be very little risk if he was to come in with me tomorrow.
And as I said, I think the last time we covered this, and we could have kept going, such as a volume of calls, was on September the 10th, when we got a statement in saying the hospitals would use their discretion. Now, it looks like nothing has changed. Nothing.
No, not for me anyway. I don't know if other people, maybe other people. I think you're in such a traumatic, vulnerable situation. You don't think to speak up. I suppose it's been a couple of days, so I'm probably getting more and more angry about the situation as it goes on. But when you're there and at the time, you're so upset. So you just don't know what to expect.
And your husband, as you point out in your email, your husband has lost a child as well.
Exactly. Exactly. And tomorrow, Joe, like, I'm going to fall asleep alone. I'm going to wake up alone, and my husband will be rang afterwards. And I don't know what kind of feelings I'm going to have after the procedure tomorrow. I don't know what to expect. I haven't been through this before. I'm very afraid, and I'm very afraid about being in the room on my own with no one that knows me there.
You will be looked after. We understand that, obviously, and you understand it.
Yeah.
By the way, am I prying if I ask, what was it like, Gemma, over the last 3 days as such, when the news that there was no heartbeat was beyond a doubt?
It's been a really weird few days, to be honest with you, Joe, right? I think I'm still pregnant.
Yeah.
I still have all the pregnancy hormones in my body. So I don't think I've really felt the loss yet.
Okay.
I still feel very attached to the baby. And I have a very strong support network around me, not just my husband, but my friends and my family, and they're all great as well. So everything is positive in that regard, and everyone has been very positive around me.
Yeah.
But as I said, I think tomorrow is just the beginning of the journey. I think the last couple of days have just been a haze of shock and, like, I don't know, just shock, really.
And did the hospital say, when you yourself and your husband asked on Friday when the news was confirmed by Holles Street, did they say, listen, there are no exceptions, I don't know the exact wording, but did they say, like, you can appeal it to, you can ask for a special plea to, if you write to the CEO or the master or whatever?
They never went through those kind of options with me. It was just, it was blanked.
Full stop.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was reassured that I would be in a part of the hospital that wouldn't have any other pregnant women, or that anyone that would be there would be getting gynecology procedures, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But not about, nothing about appealing or exceptions or anything like that. Nothing even about, you know, whether my husband could mask up and wear gloves and a gown and reduce the risk that way. It was just.
Now there was talk last week of, which was mentioned again a month ago here, about technology and this was different scenarios people were talking about on different days, but again, there's no replacing human, the contact of your partner with you when you wake up tomorrow. One, when you go in, the fear you have, which is what will not be realised, hopefully. And also when you wake up, but there's nothing to replace the human contact. A phone call won't do it, or you won't be in any mood for a phone call anyway.
Or even the protection of the mental health of the mother. Like, in my opinion, it's just totally disregarded. Okay. Totally disregarded.
Okay, so I don't know where you. Sorry, go ahead, Jim.
I the other thing is, just to put this into context as well. Like, I had cancer 7 years ago, so you know I had that traumatic news given to me as well. Now I was also on my own that day too, and I suppose I was thinking about it a lot over the weekend, like, what was the difference between receiving that news on my own and Thursday? Because I feel like Thursday was a lot worse.
Okay.
And I think the reason is the consultant saw on the form that I had a next of kin written down for my biopsy, which was my mother. And he had said that he thought about asking my mother to come into the appointment, but that I was 27 at the time, so I was an adult, and that would be my decision, not his, to make. But then straight away, he told me that if I wanted, he would ring my mother and run through, you know, what the next 6 months is going to entail, etc. And when he rang my mother, you know, he was very reassuring. He told her I would live to be an old woman, that it was a type of cancer that is very treatable, et cetera, et cetera. No one has rang my husband. Nobody has contacted him to see how he is. No one has run through what to expect. Or, well, maybe you don't know how to tell people what to expect because you're dealing with grief here. But even in terms of the procedure, physically, what to expect.
Yeah. I hope tomorrow goes as well as it can. But you really, I know you're, as you say, you're still pregnant. But you're really angry over this. I can sense it coming across. It's subdued, but you are very upset, obviously, grieving, obviously, but also anger that none of them have. It seems none of the maternity hospitals have. Though, funnily enough, the only maternity, now I could be wrong here, there's one maternity hospital where we haven't received any complaints about. I won't say it at this stage, but there is one, or any issues. And I was talking to someone who was in there, and anyway, they seem to handle it differently. So why are they all operating, so to speak, on different protocols in this really difficult situation?
Yeah.
Gemma, hopefully things will change before tomorrow, in terms of, nothing can change in terms of the devastation you're going through, but in terms of the comfort for tomorrow, we wait and see. But I'm so sorry that this has befallen you. Now, it's so glib of me to say, and you said it in your letter, that you were told 1 in 5 pregnancies end in miscarriage. But I know in the tranche of, this is even glibber, Gemma, in the tranche of calls we had last month about the maternity hospitals, one woman fell pregnant again very soon afterwards. PJ, I hope things can improve.
And so do I.
Yeah.
And hopefully that I would have good news like that again soon. And hopefully, maybe at that stage, my husband can visit with me and actually see his baby on a scan.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that, because it's highlighting it again. As I say, we finished talking about it on September the 10th in the belief that things were going to move, but they haven't. From your testimony here today, kind regards, Gemma, to you and your husband, and hopefully things will get better very quickly. And I hope tomorrow you can be in the embrace of your husband, physically, I hope, but hopefully easier than the prospect you're given at the moment. Gemma, thanks indeed. Look after yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, mind yourself. Bye-bye. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe and RT.ie in 51551 wash your hands. Now, Kevin O'Rourke has contacted us about hospital visits during the pandemic. Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Hello. First of all, may I offer my condolences to Gemma and her husband.
Well said.
Very, very, very sad.
I appreciate that. And they will as well. You just left Beaumont on Friday as a patient.
Yeah.
Okay. How long were you in for?
I think it was 9 days.
Okay. And what was it like?
Very distressing. And I was in a ward with, I think, seven other men. We were probably all in our 50s. And I've never seen distress like it. Because when you get woken up at 6 o'clock for your vitals to be taken, and then you get your breakfast at 8, your bed made at 8:30, then you get your drug run at about 10, and then it's literally lying in the bed for the rest of the day until the last drug run at night, and you see absolutely nobody. And the worst thing about it is that even if you need clean pyjamas or clean or whatever you need, some of your relations can go to reception and leave a bag there at reception.
Okay.
And normally one of the assistants in the ward would go down and collect it for you and bring it up, and you give them whatever you have and they bring it down.
Oh, okay.
And so you know that your family are downstairs, but they can't come up and see you. And the distress and the loneliness and the mental health of the men, including myself, that I saw was absolutely unbelievable. I saw grown men cry literally in their beds because they couldn't. And all they wanted was not an hour. They didn't want 10 people in the seating, just one family member to come to the bed and say, there's a bottle of Luke, say, there's a bar of chocolate, how was your day? I hope you're feeling better. And it would have given them something to look forward to from the start of the day. But all they had was, it was nearly a pleasure for a porter to come along with a wheelchair to say you're going for a test, because you knew you were getting out of the ward for a while.
And can you leave the ward, if you could you leave the ward for a ramble, as people often
do?
No.
You can leave your ward and just walk up your corridor and go back to your ward, but you can't actually leave the unit or whatever.
Yeah,
you can't do. You can't even go to the shop.
Oh, can you?
No. If you want from the shop, you have to ask. And the porters are great, and so are the nurses' assistants. If you needed a paper, or you needed a bottle of Lucozade or whatever, you'd ask them and they'd go down. But they're absolutely knackered running up and down the stairs trying to facilitate all the people that are there. And I just think that there should be... Like, there was a man there that, well, he was pretty ill and he was absolutely distressed, and his family sent him in a new phone.
Mm-hmm.
Where it had a WhatsApp video call on it.
Great.
And he used it. He couldn't use it, but the nurses rang. I think it was his daughter. And he was able to see his family for the first time. And I broke down crying. watching his reaction when he could see his family. He just could not believe it. And I just said to myself, something has to change, because, like, well, I was only in there for 9 days. There are men and women in there for 4 months, 3 months, and they're seeing absolutely nobody. And, like, even the man beside me that had just been admitted was looking at a very long stay, perhaps up to 6 or 7 weeks, because he had a serious cancer. But and he couldn't see anybody. And it's just so, so lonely. And I was just thinking that even if Beaumont or any of the hospitals could say, well, on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll have these wards open. You'll be allowed one visitor, 10 minutes, gone. And the other 3 days, we'll have these wards open. You can have one visitor and gone. Because all people want to see is their partner, their brother, their sister, their mother, their father, just to say hello and get a smile. And it's a mental health issue that's absolutely ready to explode. And I saw it myself, and the loneliness and the distress of it was just crazy. And what actually brought it to my attention was on Friday, you had, I think it was two women that were on about Christmas being lonely in this COVID era that we're in.
Yeah.
And in fact, it bears no resemblance at all, because Christmas Day, if you have a family, most people will have two or three people in their house having Christmas dinner, exchanging gifts, and having some type of a Christmas day, but being together and talk. These people will have nobody. And something has to change. I mean, because when I was leaving Beaumont, on the day I was leaving, I left the ward, I got down to the ground floor, and I was walking out. And it was like Central Station in New York with the amount of people that were downstairs. Now, I don't know whether they were all getting tests or seeing consultants or whatever, but I said to myself, how can there be so many people down here, on the floor, and you can't let just one designated visitor in? Like, you could ring up in the morning and you could say to the ward sister or the ward mate or whoever it is in charge, I'm such and such, I'm Kevin O'Rourke's sister or brother or whatever. I'm the designated person. I'll be in tonight at 7 o'clock. I'll stay 10 minutes and I'll be gone. And they could come in and say, your sister would be in or your brother would be in. And you'd say, like, that's great. Because you'd say, just for that 10 minutes, I'd be able to say, I'm well, or I don't feel too well, or I'm lonely, or it's great to see a familiar face, or thanks for the bottle of Lucozade, or whatever. And it's just it's so distressing. It's incredible. But when you know that your family are down in reception, handing in your bag of clean clothes or your toiletries or whatever, to know that they're that close to you, and that they can't come up and say hello, is absolutely distressing. It's absolutely distressing.
And Kevin, but you said it was six or seven men in the ward. Was there any? I know people are unwell. You're in hospital for a reason. So you're not on holidays. You're in there for a reason and a serious reason. Invariably.
Yes.
Was there any camaraderie among the seven of you? Was that possible?
Yeah, you do. You get close to them. To the only people you can talk to. It takes you maybe a day to get used to them, and then you find out, you know, because their consultants are coming in and they pull the screen, but you can hear everything, and eventually everybody knows what's wrong with everybody else, and you discuss it and you have a discussion amongst yourselves. But it's not the same, because their mobile phones are ringing then, and it's their wives or their partners on the end of the phone, and even though they speak to me and we've had our little chat, they want to see their partner. They want that.
Yeah, I understand.
That bit of intimacy, you know.
And
apart from me.
Do patients in hospital get post? Did anyone get post?
No. I didn't see anybody get post. I didn't see anybody get post at all. I didn't even see. You know, it was funny. I was just saying to myself when I was in there, because this is the second half I've been in there with the same illness, and it was amazing that I was looking at the lockers and I was going, the lack of Lucozade bottles, the lack of Gatmail cards, the lack of boxes of milk tray. There was nothing. There was nothing around.
Okay. And is there any, like, do people share books? Is there a mobile, anyone walk around with a trolley of books?
No, no.
Where you can give a, put a book on and take a book off? Is there?
No.
Does anyone come in saying, because I know there was a campaign by a fantastic group of young women about, at the beginning of the pandemic, I think they kept it up, trying to get iPads for hospitals where people could communicate. Is there an iPad for the ward saying you can have it on Monday to contact your family or whatever? No.
No, there was a television that didn't even work.
Ah, for God's sake.
You know, nobody knew. Even the porters and nurses, nobody knew. We asked, could somebody somehow turn on the telly so at least we could watch Judge Judy and get over an hour of the day, without thinking of your illness. But the telly couldn't be turned on. And there was just absolutely nothing to do. And all you could do was lie on the bed, really. And unless it was a day that you were free of tests, like you were probably on drips or something like that, but all you could do was lie on the bed for 10 or 12 hours and just wait for the day to be over. Yeah. And then the night time will come. And you know what it's like in hospital. There's many people hooked up to machines and some of them are, the battery is gone and they start beeping and you can't sleep, or somebody's snoring like hell, but you can't help that. And you can't sleep, or it's too warm, or it's too cold. And
you've given us a very vivid picture. By the way, Kevin, you're mad about Lucas, eh, aren't you?
Well, it's just it's a sign. It's a comfort drink.
What was the phrase? And God, they had a bottle of Lucozade in the house, and there wasn't even anyone sick. That's how well off they were. Kevin. Oh, you've really given us an insight into that. Stay there, Kevin, because Lisa Conley has contacted us. 51551. Wash your hands, Lisa. I find this hard to believe. I know it's true, but just let the listeners know what you're doing, where you're doing it, how many hours you're doing it each week, and what you're being paid. In that order, if you can remember, please. What are you doing?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Lisa.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. Well, how are you? What are you doing?
I'm good. I'm okay. Yeah. So I'll just start off by saying I'm a third-year general student nurse. I'm on placement in University Hospital Waterford. So what I kind of want to come on to talk about today is the main point that I want to drive home is student nurses across the board, nationwide, are not getting paid for placement. They're not getting paid. The general public perception is that we are student nurses getting paid, but we're not. We're not. There was a healthcare system scheme set up at the start of the year when we had the first wave. Yeah. But now that we went into our new academic year, that has been abandoned. It's gone. It's gone with the wind. So unfortunately, the really frustrating thing about this is that people think we're getting paid, but we're not getting paid. We're out here. We're doing 35 hours a week on the wards. We're looking after patients who don't have COVID. We're looking after patients who do have COVID. And we're looking after patients who may have COVID. We're looking after and caring for all of these patients unpaid. We are not being compensated. There is no financial support available for us. We're crying out. We need it. Mm-hmm. So another point that really...
I'll let you back in.
Can I interrupt there, Joe? Just for a second. Just to talk to Lisa. Because there was student nurses in my ward. And... they were brilliant.
Okay.
They were doing the work of some of the nurses.
Okay, that testimony stands. Well said, Kevin. Go ahead, Lisa.
Another point I want to actually focus on is...
Well, the other issue I'm going to ask you about, Lisa, like you're working for nothing but going to work, living, eating, travelling.
Yeah.
Costs.
So sorry, I kind of cut off there. Another point that I want to focus on is that we're taking off extra shifts on the weekend to do healthcare system work. So we're taking off an extra 12 to 24 hours on the weekend. So I would take off another 12-hour shift. And some of my friends, I know the girls, are taking off another 2 days. So that's 60 hours a week, give or take. And we're only getting paid for about 20 of those. We're burnt out. It's not safe for us. It's not safe for the patients.
Oh, you're,
it's not safe
what
for
you're
the
saying
public.
Is what, you have to do 35 hours.
Yeah, that's
which
exactly
for many
what
people
saying.
is a working week. Do 35 hours.
Then
you have to do that for nothing. And then you if there are other shifts available on top of that.
We take those to put fuel in our cars.
Yeah.
We take those to pay for a student's accommodation. And Joe, can I just say that us, student nurses going into this course, we knew that nurses were at the very, very bottom of the ladder, but we never thought that our health would be so disregarded against by our own government. We're crying out. We're fighting against a virus, and we're more than willing to do this, but we need to be compensated. We need financial support. We need all of the above. No one else would be expected to go onto the front line and risk their lives, risk their families' lives for free. We need to be paid.
And bizarrely, you're the only you're working on the COVID front line.
Of course we are, yeah.
And you're not even getting a COVID payment.
We're not eligible for the COVID payment, can I say? According to social welfare, none of us as students aren't eligible, but we're not eligible for the COVID payment. Yeah, unfortunately, it's sickening. Really, it's really sickening.
And as Kevin said, he's just left hospital after 9 days, and he said that the student nurses were doing the work.
Do vital work on the wards. We care for the patients every day, and we do it with our smile on our face. But oh my God, are we getting burnt out? We can't go on like this anymore, doing 60-plus hours. It's unsafe for everyone all around. It's just not fair. We're calling on the government. We're calling on them to do the right thing, to stop putting this issue on the long finger. We need to be paid. That's the bottom line.
And why did it? Why did they finish? I know everything has to finish, but why did it? Why did it say it finishes at the end of August? Now we've had a resurgence.
Yeah, so essentially the healthcare assistance scheme ended. And to be honest, we didn't actually get much of an explanation why it ended. It just said it wasn't going ahead. But as we know, and unfortunately, COVID is not going anywhere anytime soon, and we're going to be needed more than ever on the wards in January, on the wards next summer. We need to be paid for the foreseeable future. And in an ideal world, we would be reimbursed for the last 4 weeks we've already provided.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it, Lisa. And I should say,
to be honest, me and all the girls are here just like, we don't know either.
Yeah.
And it's nurses and midwives across the board, first, second and third year. It's not only an issue in Waterford, it's an issue nationwide. And I speak for every nurse when I say we are burnt out, we need to be paid.
Okay. Stay if you could, Lisa, stay with us for a sec. Elizabeth, go ahead. More hospital stories.
Hi, Jill.
It's about your 91-year-old dad.
91-year-old dad admitted twice in the last couple of months by ambulance, unfortunately, because there was an emergency.
Right.
I won't give the name of the hospital now, Jill, because we've made
fine.
A formal complaint at this stage. The first time was bad enough, but to have it repeated the second time was even worse. I did get in to see him on both occasions for one day because of his age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my dad is completely compos mentis, but physically very immobile.
Okay.
So he was taken in with urinary tract infection, chest infection. When I went in to see him, no televisions, very fancy televisions hanging on a gantry arm, but none of them working. And he was in two different wards on two different floors over the two occasions. No newspapers. My dad reads the newspaper from cover to cover every day.
Yeah.
Calling me on his mobile when he couldn't get a nurse to answer the buzzer.
Wow.
On one occasion, he called me very, very distressed altogether. This was on his first occasion in there. He had been 2.5 hours sitting in the chair where they had taken him out of the bed to make the bed, as appropriate, left him in the chair, closed the door, and he realised he had no buzzer. He assumed they'd be back in a while to put him back into the bed. So 2.5 hours later, in a hospital gown, frozen, he called me to see if I could contact a nurse to have him put back into the bed.
Wow.
I mean, you just couldn't write it, Joe.
And was he in a room on his own for a lot of time?
He was in a room on his own, yes.
He was in a room on his own, no TV, no radio, no newspapers.
Yeah. On his second visit, because, I made contact with an assistant director of nursing, which was, just by chance that I managed to make that contact. She was actually buying the newspapers for him on his second visit in. Now, very kind of her, but totally inappropriate, Joe.
And what about, could he pick up, is there Wi-Fi in hospitals?
They did promise that they would bring him in a laptop and send a junior nurse in because he loves the Grand Prix and there was a Grand Prix on. That never came.
A transistor radio?
Not a thing.
Could you have left him in a transistor
radio? I suppose I could have done. He's quite hard of hearing, so the radio doesn't work as well as he prefers the television.
The images.
Yeah, exactly. But it just, Joe, I don't know where to start. I mean, the complaints that we've sent in obviously identifies everything that went wrong. But getting wrong information then, they the identified times that you can ring in to inquire about your family member. The phone's just ringing out. You know, now I know they're busy. The nurses are busy and all of that, and they have my sympathy. But at the same time, we're 6 or 7 months into COVID now, and I really think that at this stage they could have put some kind of administrative arrangements in place. You know, to allow for delivery of newspapers. It only needs one person to be, you know, checked out and COVID checked and all the rest of it to do the deliveries. The shop is downstairs. They wouldn't even allow me to pay in advance and have them delivered up to them.
They wouldn't allow you to put money into the shop?
No. The day that I went in to visit him on the first occasion, on my way out, I went into the shop and I said, can I pay for the newspaper to be delivered up to my dad every day?
Yeah.
No, sorry, we have no arrangement for that.
And who said that, the shop or the...
Yeah, the shop. But the shop is functioning away. You see, I suppose for people
but
who
you
are...
You can go... I know prison visits are restricted in the Dublin area at the minute.
Yeah.
But you can go and leave money for a prisoner into the shop.
Yeah.
To pay for their papers.
Well, I don't know, Joe. I'll take your word for that one.
No, I do know because I worked there. You can, and you're saying in a hospital, you cannot deposit money.
That's what the girl in the shop told me. I mean, for people who are mobile and can come down, you know, come out of their room or their ward and come down to the shop, that's fine. I mean, the coffee shops are opening and working. The little shop, the newsagent shop is open and working. But that's no use to my dad. And I'm sure he's not the only one, Joe.
What is the jinx about TVs in hospitals?
I don't know.
All broke. Yeah, are the maintenance crew, are they...
Well, I was told that the company who installed them had gone out of business.
Oh, you're not serious.
And I inquired,
You're not serious.
It's not rocket science. I'm sure, you know, it wouldn't take a whole lot to put them working again. But you can imagine the day he was lying in a bed looking at a blank wall.
Oh, stop.
You know, so, I mean, he's very strong mentally because I can tell you, Joe, I'm enough younger than he is and I would have been gone mad.
Books? Kindle?
Yeah. No, it doesn't use Kindle.
You,
I mean,
see,
I
I'm making all these presumptions here from...
No, I understand. Yeah, no, I mean, he does read and I had brought him in on the day that I went into him. I brought him newspaper and I brought him his motor magazine, which he really enjoys. Yeah. But I mean, that doesn't last very long.
Can patients in hospitals get post?
Don't know that. Didn't inquire about that.
I just wonder. I presume they can. They have to be. They have to be. I don't know. There's no have to be anymore in this.
Well, I guess so. But
pandemic
world
we live in.
Yeah, it's the administrative arrangements, Joe, that are bothering me. And I mean, like Kevin said to you about the pajamas, I really hadn't given it a whole lot of thought because my dad had gone in from a nursing home and he went in with everything that he needed. But I assumed that because of COVID, you know, there would be some other arrangement. But anyway, my dad called me to say that he was now out of pajamas and if I could come in and collect his laundry and bring him in clean ones, which of course I did. But when I went in, I did ring first, Joe, to check that that was okay because I thought it was a bit unusual in COVID that, you know, things were coming out of the hospital. So I rang and they said, yes, I could come in and to ring up from the lobby, which I did. And I stood for half an hour until somebody, again, trying to ring the extension into the ward. No answer, no answer, no answer. Eventually, I got through and somebody came down and collected the new pyjamas from me and brought me the washing in a bag.
Yeah. How's your dad now?
Back in the nursing home and reasonably okay. The prognosis wasn't good. I mean, I suppose...
No visits either.
No visits, no. The worst of it all really was Joe on his second visit, so he was admitted by ambulance again, and in A&E, the night he was admitted, a consultant told him that he had a couple of months to live and that he better get his affairs in order. With nobody with him, a nurse gave him a phone to call me and let me know the news.
A consultant told him?
A consultant told him, yeah.
That he only had a few months to live.
And he better get his affairs in order.
At this court, apart from that's some bedside manner. But apart from that message, did your father know he had a terminal illness?
Well, no, but I think it's not a terminal illness, Joe, but it's infections and just, you know, with his age and various other bits and pieces, I suppose wear and tear at 91 years, they reckon that another infection or, you know, that might be the one that'll take him out, you know? But
that's a bit. Anyway,
But it was, yeah, no, it was very crude. And he did speak to me afterwards and apologised, but he said that my father's attitude to his health was quite bullish, which I thought was an awful word to use. But he's just, he's quite determined, my dad, you know.
Oh, your father, did your father land an A&E with 20 cigarettes in his mouth and a six-pack under his arm?
Absolutely not. He never smoked in his life.
So how would he be, how's he bullish about his health?
Yeah, because I suppose what keeps him going, Joe, is that he hopes he'll get better, you know?
And he wants the papers, and he wants probably to do a crossword, and he wants books, and he wants a telly.
Yeah, and as I said, he's, you know, he's 100% clear in his mind.
91, is my own mother is 91 now. The problem that you're trying to get across to... we want everyone to go to a hospital if they have a hospital appointment. We have to say that now, please.
Absolutely.
Do not put off going to a hospital. We're trying to get across to people, like, if you do, God, that's why you have to really look after your health, insofar as you can at that age. I know you get infection. But, like, if you go into hospital, there's no visitors. And it really is tough, as we're hearing on people. It really is tough.
And this particular hospital has a statistic up on their website, Joe, because they did a little bit of investigation, that a person over 80 who spends a week in a hospital bed, ages by 10 years, loses 14% muscle mass and 10% blood oxygen. Okay. And yet he was left in the bed, apart from the time when they abandoned him in the chair, but for the rest of the time he was in the bed all the time. No physio. Not got up for him to walk around.
I'm not presuming. Is there a chaplain, a lay chaplain, as they say?
Very good lay chaplain who came into him. Okay. And, that was the only bright spark, I think, really. Yeah. And arranged for the priest to come in to visit him. And both gave my dad great consolation. I should have mentioned those on the positive side.
Yeah, they didn't come in saying, we're here to give you the last rites.
The consultant sent us. No, gave him the sacrament of the sick, but that's...
that's normal, yeah. Long may he... He sounds like he's got great go in him still, right?
He certainly
has. And 91 is a good age, but there's many more years in him, PG.
You can imagine, Joe, when he came out after the first one, he said, you know, he was never going back in there again. But then the infection
came again. That's outside his control, yeah.
And once you have to go in by ambulance, you have no choice.
Yeah.
You know? But it's cruel. Okay. I mean, I can see how old people would rather stay at home than go in there.
Yeah, but we want them to go now. They have to
go.
We do.
Yeah,
I know you're
absolutely
saying we really do.
Yeah.
Okay, Elizabeth, I have fingers crossed for your dad now. And he sounds like a great man. Okay, thanks, Elizabeth. 51551, watch out.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
There are some awful stories coming in about hospitals and hospital visits and being given bad news. Margaret Daly, Margaret, good afternoon. Your mother was in hospital for 4 weeks.
Yes, Joe.
Is she still in?
She's still in the hospital, yes, she is, yeah.
And what age is she, Margaret?
She is 92, Joe.
And have you been able to visit her at all?
No one has been able to visit her. No one, no familiar face. No familiar voice to my poor mum, who has never been in hospital before in her life. It's just heartbreaking, to say the least. And, I mean, just listening to your other callers, it seems to be something that's ongoing.
Phone?
Mummy would have been very, very capable of using phones and everything before she went to the hospital, but she seems to be losing the touch for that as well.
Okay.
We're not getting as many calls from her. Again, we're bringing up her bag, her pyjamas, little bits and pieces, bringing them to the porter. The porter goes up and brings the bag down. And it's like on days we're getting the bag back that we have brought up, that it hasn't even been emptied out for her. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just like she's been left to her own devices and she's not capable anymore, which is sad.
So the bag that you send up with her bits and pieces, toiletries or whatever in it, is returned unopened?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And pyjamas still folded the way we sent them up.
And what is, insofar as any of us know, what is the prognosis for your mother?
That we don't know. Mother would have been great, very, very active, living on her own, cooking, cleaning, washing, baking, doing all of the things that all of us can do. She had a little TIA when the ambulance arrived.
It's a mini stroke, isn't that what people call it?
Yeah, mini stroke. When the ambulance then arrived, she had, you know, she had come out of it, but they brought her up for observation and check-in, which they would do. And they are monitoring her and and we're just hoping, I suppose, hoping, but we're not really being told anything, which I'm hoping is good news. But we just feel if, you know, if she's not being stimulated and not being, you know, getting walks and things, at that age, they lose, as your other caller said, you know, their muscle mass and blood oxygen and things like that. They do lose them very quickly at that age.
Everyone, television, stimulation, radio, newspapers, books.
There's no newspapers. Again, there's no shops. There doesn't seem to be anybody going around. We would send in papers occasionally. We have asked about her getting papers. Mm. Mummy would have always read the papers.
Yeah.
She would have been big into her word search. She seems to have lost interest in that. The first week, she was asking, has nonnies come to visit us? And we were explaining to her, and she totally gets the whole thing with COVID and everything. But I just think, you know, like when they go past a certain age, I just feel that maybe there should be some kind of an exception or something, and even let one member of a family in to see, even if it means gowning up. Even if it's only once a week, at least you can go in and see for yourself.
And have the hospital said to you, Margaret, if God forbid your mother's situation changes significantly, that you will be informed and allowed in?
Well, isn't that what they're saying, that in exceptional circumstances, end of life, that you will be allowed visits, you will be allowed in? Yeah.
But that's the only circumstance, end of life.
End of life, yeah. Yeah.
So that's not...
Well, COVID is there, that's what they say.
Yeah, I know, Margaret, I don't know whether you want to listen to the next call, because it is quite distressing, another true story. So I'll let you go, Margaret, for the time being. Hopefully your mother does come out of hospital and very soon, but I hear what you're saying. Margaret, that's Margaret Daly. Margaret, thanks a million. Tracy, good afternoon, Tracy.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for taking my call. I'm really nervous now, by the way.
Take your time. It's your aunt.
Yeah, so my aunt lived alone in Dublin. She's 81 years old. Most beautiful, graceful person you've ever met in your life. She was just fantastic. All her family are down here in Cork. And she got sick in March, and she went to her local GP.
Right.
And he didn't diagnose her with, you know, what actually was as the issue. But he gave her an antibiotic. And the following week, she had said to me during that week that it wasn't working. And I said, oh, you should go back to your GP and let him know that you think you might need to be hospitalised, because it sounded really serious. And I had a really bad feeling about it. So she went back to the doctor. I saw a different doctor this time. And he gave her some other antibiotic. And the day after, she went to a shop to pick up a few bits. And she collapsed in there. And she was brought by ambulance to a hospital, and she was 2 weeks in hospital, in that particular hospital, and within a couple of days of going into the hospital, she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, which came like a bolt out of the blue to her and to all of us, you know.
And she was told on her own. She would have been on
her own. Yeah, she was told on her own, and thankfully she had her phone with her, Joe, because...
Yeah.
That was the only way we could communicate with her for those weeks. And she didn't have a stitch with her except what she went into the hospital with. She had no toothbrush, nothing like that. And
because she was taken by ambulance, as you say.
Yeah, yeah, she wasn't prepared at all. She had no overnight bag or anything, you know. So I had to try and organise with a cousin on the other side of the family to bring items to her from the pharmacy and that, which were very, and she was very grateful for as well. But my aunt said, there's no newspaper, radio, television. She goes, there's a television here, she said, but it's not working. So I rang the hospital and I said, what's the story with the television? And they said, oh, you have to hire the television.
Oh, for God's sake.
And I was like, you have to hire a television? That's the first I've ever heard of any hospital saying you had to hire the television. So they gave me a number for this guy who is in another part of Dublin. And he said, yeah, I'll call out to your aunt tomorrow and I'll hook her up. €17 a week.
What?
Pay by postal order. So I had to organise this twice, the postal order twice for this guy, because we didn't know how long she was going to be in hospital for. There was no radio there, nothing. We just couldn't believe that she had to hire a television, you know, and she's terminally ill at this stage and all she wanted was, you know, to watch television or to listen to some music on the radio. I rang the hospital to say, could you deliver the newspaper to her every day? Mm-hmm. Because I rang the shop downstairs and they said, oh no, we don't do deliveries during COVID. So the hospital said, the ward said, yeah, we'll organise one for her every day. And I said, yeah, we'll sort out the payments. So she got it the first day and that was the last day she got it. They hadn't organised for any other days after that. So then my aunt actually described the hospital as a hellhole, to be honest. And she wouldn't say these things lightly, you know.
And these were her last days.
Yeah, her last days. And she would never have, you know, she'd never asked for much in her life at all. And she's always very, very grateful for every single thing she got in her life. And to think she had to spend her last days like this with no family around her. Like, we were in lockdown in April, so nobody could travel from Cork to Dublin to be with her. And she had no family in Dublin. And
did the hospital say, listen, this is an essential journey?
Yeah,
we'll give you, we'll fax you, we'll email you a letter.
No.
If the guards stop you, you have, someone has to come and see the woman.
No, they didn't. And my uncle then, my aunt was actually moved to a really lovely hospice in her last 2 days. So this was 2 weeks after she went into the first hospital.
Yeah.
2 days, or 2 weeks afterwards, she was moved to the hospice. And she was so happy to get there because she knew she'd be treated really well and she would see out her days there. And they said to my uncle, you will need to have a letter to get clearance from, you know, the guards to come up to Dublin. And he was allowed up. She went in on the Wednesday. He was allowed up on the Friday to be with her. And I got a letter to go up the following morning and I just couldn't wait to get up to my aunt. But she passed away that Friday evening, so I never got to see her. Yeah, it just breaks my heart, you know, to think that people are at their end of life and this is how they go. It's just heartbreaking, like.
And you, Tracy, you mentioned that she was told in hospital on her own that you have terminal cancer.
Yeah.
And she rang. And who would she ring? She rang her, it's her sisters or brothers or the likes.
She's one brother.
Yeah.
She's one brother and family. And she has, my dad passed away a few years ago, but then we would be the other, you know, part of that family.
And you look after her and care for her.
Yeah.
Mind her even from a distance. God rest her.
And it's just so sad, Joe, to think that her last 2 weeks of her life, she had a horrific time and very little dignity as well, you know. It was just really, really tragic.
Her only
saving grace was that she didn't die of COVID, you know, because that would have added another element to it, you know. But just to think that it was so hard for us to even get to go and visit her. And in the end, it was too late, you know, for myself to see her.
Yeah. The television thing is bizarre as well.
Isn't it? I'd never heard the like before.
That's over £800 a year.
Yeah,
70 quid
big,
a week.
Big bucks,
and
big bucks
it's a television. It's a television in the room, and he just turns it on. Or?
Yeah. He switches it on. Yeah, it's crazy. I've never come across the like before. It shouldn't be happening.
Now I know staff are under pressure. God, we know that from this program.
Well, yes,
programs.
I know.
We
yeah.
know the pressure, but this is not about pressure. This is about.
Yeah.
Humanity and the decisions.
Totally, Joe. Yeah. Like, she was calling for a glass of water for hours and hours one day. She rang me and I said, that's desperate. She said, and all I want is, she said, something sweet to drink. And so I got my friend in Kilmainham to drop over a few cans of 7-Up to her. And so she was delighted with it, absolutely delighted to get them from him.
So she rang you from a Dublin hospital, you're in Cork, to say, I need a glass of water.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beyond belief.
Oh, yeah. She said her calls were ignored to get a glass of water. I mean, how hard is it to bring a jug of water to an elderly woman who's dying of cancer, you know?
By the way, I'm sure in the world, I know you said 7-Up, but I'm sure in the world we live in, the likes of, who makes 7-Up? Coca-Cola do, don't they? It's made in Dublin, C&C, I think, make it. Mm-hmm. Or Coca-Cola, or Lucozade. They used to have a massive plant up there on the Long Way Road. I think it's gone Beecham. I'm sure all those companies would gladly, or Lidl, or Tesco, would gladly say, how many patients have you got in the hospital? 842. Yeah. Well, we'll deliver 1,000 bottles and you can distribute them. If people want it, they can take it. If they don't want it, just little things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know, and they make the world a difference.
She sounds an incredible woman. Was she?
Oh, she's fantastic, Joe. She has the best sense of humour. Oh, we got on so well with her. She was just amazing. Yeah,
where was she from?
A really brilliant woman.
Where was she from originally, Tracy?
From Cork. She's originally from Cork, yeah.
And when did she come to Dublin?
Oh, back in, I think it was the 60s.
Okay. Was she happy?
Yeah, she lived in Dublin an awfully long time. She loved it.
Did she? Yeah.
She lived on her own. There was talk maybe she might move back to Cork in the last year, but her heart really was in Dublin, so she's happy to stay there.
And what about the funeral, Tracy?
Oh, sure, there was just 10 of us there.
Yeah.
You know, it was her 10 closest family members were there, so that was so sad. And, you know, the most poignant thing was when we were leaving the church and driving to the crematorium, out along the road for a couple of miles outside her home village, we say, those people waving to us, you know, neighbours, and it's just heartbreaking just to think this is how she's being sent off, you know. And then we went to the crematorium and we couldn't actually go inside the door. So we stayed in the car park and we played a beautiful piece of classical music, Gabriel's Oboe. We played it there and watched her coffin in the rain for those 5 minutes, and then she was wheeled off into the crematorium. So we couldn't even be with her in the very final few minutes there, you know. We just had to say goodbye at the car park.
You sound like you were incredibly close.
Yeah.
And incredibly
caring. Yeah. I loved her so much.
You were blessed with her and she was blessed with you.
We were so blessed to have her in our life. Yeah, we were.
What a wonderful, wonderful woman. Mm. God rest her. God rest her.
Thanks, Joe.
And was she religious, Tracy, or did she? Do you think she might have been able to find comfort with a chaplain? Or I know there's lay chaplains.
She wouldn't have been.
Yeah, okay,
overly religious.
I'm just clutching at straws here, trying to help you. Think that anyway.
Well, Joe, the saving grace was that she had her phone with her, and she had her charger in her bag.
When she collapsed,
because that was our lifeline to her.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know. It would have been just completely. Okay. Off the scale, you know.
Well, treasure the good moments. Sounds
the
like there was
her.
Many.
You
may she rest in peace.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Tracy. You mind yourself as well.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
You too.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
By the way, there are quite a few distressing calls about women. Either in hospital, just left the maternity hospital, or about to go into maternity hospital, and they feel so badly done by and so badly treated in terms of the current restrictions that it's with only a minute left. We'll give them plenty of time tomorrow. The last thing they need now is me to rush, and when they feel they have been rushed and mistreated. But Joe, just before we finish, you have a positive experience in a hospital.
Yes. Joe, I have.
You were in with COVID. You're 82. You're from Dublin, 12. And how did you get on?
Well, Dublin, the hospitals, it's not a nice experience. But I spent from March till the 2nd of June.
Wow.
In hospital, with the exception of a 2-week spell out of hospital.
With COVID. Wow.
And in that space time, in the middle of it, I was very, very bad.
Okay.
I lost 2 stone in weight.
Wow.
You know, and very, very ill I was. But I got very good. I could get, every day, any washing I sent down in a bag, and the nurses brought it down.
Okay.
And then anything that my family sent into me, by 4 o'clock, they brought it up to me in my ward.
Okay.
I got papers, I got books, I got iPads.
Brilliant.
Whatever I wanted. And the nurses were brilliant. And even if the nurses were too busy, the two little girls that served the food, if you were stuck,
they're brilliant staff as
well. And they
could
go down and get the paper for you. There's no problem.
I will say
television. I was in a ward on my own, or at one stage, and then I was in a ward with five other people. But I didn't mind. I hired a television for €15 a week.
I'm not saying they should have to, but prisoners don't have to hire televisions.
I know, maybe not. But anyway, it was a terrible experience what I had.
At one stage,
I was so bad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know whether they were surgeons or consultants came up to me and asked me, what my end of life wishes were, and that didn't do me any good.
Yeah. But the other thing you got, Joe, was better, wasn't it? You're out of hospital.
I'm out of hospital since the 2nd of June.
And how are you feeling?
I'm at home. I'm good.
Good man.
I do my exercise every day.
Good lad.
Now, but I'll never be the same.
Because
my oxygen levels are. I struggle with them a bit, I get tired easy. But I'm home, I'm able to do a lot of things, and with my wife and family, that's the plus.
Okay, and you're able to praise the hospital, well done.
Absolutely.
And you're able to remind people of how awful this COVID is, and for people to wash their hands, wear a mask,
I hear some of the young people saying, it's no harm. I said, if I could only talk to them. I tell them
what was the worst part of it, Joe, briefly? I'm way over.
Well, briefly, it was the time when I was near the end and I was struggling.
Yeah.
But then I just made up my mind when getting home to my family.
Okay. Where you are now, safe and sound, Joseph. We'll talk soon again. Look after yourself. Brilliant, brilliant message there. Today's producer, Rebecca Mean. Ray Darcy next.